Hi, Pacers fans. This is Victor Oladipo, and you're listening to Pacers Sound.
And we welcome you here on a Wednesday inside the Sideline Guys podcast alongside Jeremiah Johnson. I'm Pat Boylan in downtown Indianapolis. Jeremiah Johnson out in Sacramento coming off that win against the Warriors. And it's kind of funny to look back at it because in some ways it's one of the it'll probably go down as one of the least memorable games of the season. That Indiana got themselves into a hole. They didn't play very well for a half. They did enough in the third quarter, played enough defense in the fourth. It wasn't necessarily an exciting game, but they did enough to get a win that they should have had. However, I thought Mark Monteith had some interesting context to it as well, and that you're going to look back at that game if you're going through the media book or whatever in 15 or 20 years, and it's going to look like a win on the road against the defending champion, regardless of who was on the floor. But you were out there, of course. Your duties have you on site. I do the radio pregame show and sideline reporting from our studio in downtown Indianapolis. You were there. What were your impressions of that 92-81 win?
I like the fact that at halftime they understood they were not playing well and they turned it on defensively. And I also liked Victor Oladipo early on. He was perfect from the field in the first half, although I believe just 4 for 4. And his line for the night was very good. You like to see Victor Oladipo 9 for 12 from the field, 2 for 3 from 3. I'm not sure that I like him falling down and having a bloody face, nose, mouth. But in general, you're going to win a lot of games when you defend the way they did in the second half. I know it was Golden State's backups, and you know it's a trickle-down effect because your backups have to play more, and then guys who maybe would not even play at all end up playing a little bit. And it's just one of those situations. It still is difficult to get up for a game like that, because when the schedule comes out, you're thinking about the last 2 weeks of the season, having these two games against the Golden State Warriors, and everybody's talking about how difficult the schedule's going to be, and then, okay, you think Draymond is at least going to play, and then nobody plays. I mean, they don't have a double-digit scorer on the court. So that is just, you know, it takes a little bit of time to kind of get into the flow, get fired up. You've also got that effect of the time zone change, and I was a little tired at some point before tip-off just because I hadn't quite gotten acclimated. The team left earlier on Monday to try to be in the Pacific time zone a little bit longer and to try to get to where you feel like it's actually the time it says it is and not the time that your body is still trained to think it is. So a lot of factors go into this, not making excuses, but I think the most important thing was, you know, if it's unusual circumstances or maybe not everyone is playing well, you can always play defense, and that's what they did in the second half. And when you see 33 points in the second half, no matter who's playing, I mean, these are guys that had put up, you know, good point production in other games, and to do that is impressive. Golden State didn't want to lose another game on their home court. They just lost and were kind of embarrassed by Utah the previous game. So I thought it's one of those wins. You said it. I don't even know if about a month from now I'm going to remember much about that game. It's not going to stand out as one of these epic Pacers-Warriors matchups, but it is a win, and I see, looking at the box score right now, 44 of them in the left-hand column. You'll take that.
I know. And you talk about the defense, 11 points in the fourth quarter. I mean, if you're going into this game and you say you're going to trail by two going into the fourth, you're going to score 24 points in the fourth, you go, ooh, I don't know. It's going to be close. Can they play enough defense? And yet Indiana had their best defensive fourth quarter of the season, at least in terms of points allowed, giving up 11. And yeah, the players on the floor aren't necessarily or really anything resembling what the Warriors actually are. That said, you of course can't control that. And this is a game where the Pacers catch a huge amount of luck, but now they open up with a win against the Warriors on the road, a game that most teams around them are not going to have, and they've got Sacramento coming up. Before we look forward, let's take a step back here, because while this was a few days ago, that Sunday win against Miami, I think this is still the most pertinent overarching topic around the Pacers right now. What Sunday was, what Sunday meant, and most specifically, it was one, clinching a playoff berth, and two, clinching more wins this year than last year. One of those may be more sentimental than the other. The other one is more concrete. But just to do that, you know, I remember we were sitting here in Indianapolis about a month ago, and you said, you know, it would be really nice if by the March 20s, mid-late 20s in March, the Pacers could lock up a playoff berth. And I remember when you said that, I kind of go, Yeah, that'd be nice, but that's going to take a lot of effort, and it's going to be really tough, especially, remember, the schedule, the Pacers are 6-3 since they started the toughest final 16 games, I think, of the NBA schedule of any team in the NBA. They're 6-3 over it, so I was like, yeah, that would be nice, but I'm not sure how realistic it is, and yet there they were on Sunday, clinching a playoff spot and clinching a 43rd win.
It was such an unusual game, or not maybe unusual. I guess it was very usual because we've seen in the fourth quarter they give up leads a little bit, but then when they absolutely need it the most, they make the plays down the stretch. Sure, it took a James Johnson, I think, missed free throw after a questionable sequence when Thaddeus Young was called for not one but two fouls that had me shaking my head. And it goes to overtime, and I did have some observations at the end of regulation and during that fourth quarter. You know, Nate McMillan, now that he has everybody healthy and available, he has some interesting decisions to make in the crunch time moments of games. And Darren Collison is someone who maybe had not had a great game, but when the team is struggling offensively, it does appear to me as though one quick fix can be putting Darren Collison in the game. And there were, you know, significant moments of that fourth quarter where he was not in the game. And, you know, the chemistry on this team is great. Everybody gets along. But there are still guys with pride that want to be on the floor in the critical moments. And so I was really watching Darren the different times during the timeouts, and I could tell he was kind of getting a little fidgety, and he wanted to be out there on the floor. And Corey Joseph was playing good defense, but the offense just was not there. And then in overtime, and he had gone in a few different times in that fourth quarter, but then had come out on offense, defense, substitutions. And then in the overtime, the way the offense clicked, I mean, to score more points in an overtime than you did in the 5-minute overtime than you did in the 12-minute fourth quarter is saying something. And I do think there's something that can be taken from that is play that overtime. You know, you get back in a situation when you're in a close game, you've got to still execute. You can't just change everything you're doing and let Victor try to do everything. And Victor's learning. So that was just a little bit inside that specific game. But big picture, I really, when I asked Victor Oladipo after the game, and I was thinking about how to phrase this question, because in the lead up, it was obvious the Pacers were going to clinch a playoff spot, you know, within a few days. And I personally was hoping it could be done in front of the home fans and it would not happen from a Detroit loss, but it could happen via a Pacers win. And so it set up perfectly. It was a, you know, thrilling game. Victor hit a big shot, kind of like he has all season. So it was, to me, it was the perfect situation and scenario. But, you know, there are times that Victor can give us what we want, but sometimes it's the politically correct answer and one game at a time. Sometimes that's kind of the direction he'll go with it. And so I was like, I want this to mean something to the players, because if I was a player, I would want to celebrate it. But you couldn't fault him for saying, yeah, this is no big deal. We want to win in the playoffs. But at that moment, you kind of were just like, you know, I hope he feels what I'm feeling and what the fans are feeling, and go along with me on this one. And so the first question was just, you know, that feeling of getting into the playoffs and winning a game like this, and, you know, kind of feeling like everything you've done this season, there's a moment to kind of, you know, feel a little satisfaction. And he paused before he answered the first question. And I'm like, oh, is he gonna say it's no big deal? Because I don't really want that to be the answer. And then he said, it's everything. You know, it's unbelievable. And it's like, perfect. That's exactly what I wanted you to do, Victor. Good job. And I almost felt like I didn't even really need to ask any other questions. And the other thing that was interesting. So, you know, we've talked about those interviews and how we try to mix it up. And, you know, there was a stretch there in December where you could have really interviewed, or November, December, you could have interviewed Victor after every single game. And, you know, we don't want to necessarily do that. But then I feel like it's gotten to where you take his 20-point performance or his 23 points and four steals a little for granted. And maybe you're too often choosing someone else to kind of spread it around. And for home games, it's good because you're going to get him in the locker room anyway. So it doesn't really matter who you get win, except that walk-off on the court is always a little bit better in terms of emotions and such. But,
right,
you know, I was thinking during that game, you really could have kind of gone any number of directions, but it, you know, it was Victor's season, Victor's game, Victor's turn almost. And then when he hit that three in overtime, I was glad that was the decision I made. But as he walked up, he said to David Benner, was standing right there, and whether he said it to David or to me, he said, "Oh, TV, I must have actually had a good game." So, you know, these guys, I appreciate that they're aware of it. They understand that that's their chance to kind of talk to the fans. And I, it all went perfect to me. It was only three questions, probably as long as any of the others, because of, you know, he was just, I think he said everything the fans wanted to hear. Of course, he, you know, without even really being prompted, again, spoke to how much he loves being here, how much he's, you know, loves Indianapolis and the fans. And then he went on to sign a bunch of autographs. I just thought it was kind of the perfect closing chapter to this part of the story, I should say. You know, it's the season still has, I think, a number of chapters that can still be written, but I think there is some finality to just getting into the playoffs in March and doing it in front of the home fans in a game that reminded us of some of the games that made the fans fall in love with this team. So I do think, while I said in a couple weeks I'll forget this Warriors game, I don't think I'll forget that Miami game for a while, because I think that was perfect, and I don't know if you could have written it much better.
I'm glad you talked about that Victor interview, because I wanted to go in that direction as well. We've talked about how those interviews work. You have the first choice, I have the second choice. Some games, as you mentioned, Victor Oladipo scores 47 points, and it's very obvious who the number one is, and then there's a significant drop-off for number two. The nice thing about that game was, if I had the first choice, I also would have picked Victor, because his season and what he has encapsulated to this team has been most important. But I felt like we had a really good 1A in Darren Collison. He hit maybe three of the four biggest shots for the Pacers down the stretch. And Darren always brings pretty good perspective as well. So as we were talking to Darren, and then as I went back and watched your interview with Victor, the phrase that kind of stood out to me was just genuine appreciation. And it was two different players from two different paths to this team, two players that were not here last year to experience. We talk so much on this podcast, but just how refreshing this season has been compared to last season. Those guys don't even have that basis to go off of. But listening to Victor and listening to Darren, it was amazing how many similarities there were in your interview and mine, and that there was such a genuine appreciation. And with Darren, I kind of tossed to him the same sort of question from the aspect of, you know, considering how your last few years have gone in Sacramento, you've been here before, you've been to the playoffs before, but what does it mean knowing that you're going to be back, considering how the last couple of years have gone? And his response was, in a lot of ways, you could just kind of line them up with Victor and let them play, and you're hearing almost the exact same thing. Such an appreciation to be here, an appreciation for what this team has built and the chemistry that it has, you know, an appreciation to get to play meaningful basketball games again. And it's funny how oftentimes, you know, your interview has the one path of that specific player and what he did that night, and mine has a different path of a different player and what he did that night. This one, it was almost like we were interviewing two different guys that were saying the exact same thing, but they were both, I think, two of the best interviews that we've done this season. And I think that's what stood out to me, just Darren Collison's reaction, Victor Oladipo's reaction, how similar they were. And I think it probably speaks to how much this team is on the same page. And you go back to last year, it took game 82 to clinch last year. 2 years ago, I believe it took game 81 to clinch. So you go and you say that clinching happened in game 74 this year. I mean, just how nice it is that you and I are sitting here. We're not even into April yet, and yet we know the Pacers are going to be there. We'll talk about potential opponents coming up. We'll talk about what the Pacers need to do on this road trip coming up. But just the comfort factor that the Pacers are in the playoffs. We're not even into April, and you know that there's going to be basketball past April 10th. It's good, I think, from our perspective to have that. And while you don't want the players resting on that, I think there's something that it can do from a confidence perspective there as well.
Yeah, it almost makes you fight that much harder. And when you clinch on the final game of the regular season, there's this feeling of relief, and you just accomplished the goal that you'd been fighting for so long for. And I think maybe, even though those games against the Cavs last year were close, and the Raptors series, the Pacers came out and won game one, when you clinch that late, you almost feel like that's the be-all and end-all, because that's all you've been thinking about for a month. And I can remember last year after clinching, you know, I went in the locker room and I talked with Dan Burke for a little bit, and they kind of had one of those moments of, you know, let's celebrate this, because this season was a grind. You know, it's like I could tell there's such a difference in just kind of talking to the staff and the coaches during a season of how they're getting along with the season. They've been doing this for so long, so they, you know, they have a pretty good pulse of whether it's, you know, it's a grind or whether it's a joy. And this season's a little bit of a joy. Last year was a grind, and so they were just like, oh, I can't believe, not that we couldn't believe we got in last year, but there was just this feeling of relief. and it was hard to kind of get back up. Now that you've clinched so early, you're just focused on fine-tuning things, working on maybe specific out-of-bounds plays against certain teams, and we'll look at potential matchups a little bit later. But I do think there is a big benefit to doing it when you do it, and now you're continuing to fight for seeding, and I think it's very important. And Nate's been asked a couple times about resting guys, and I think he's managed the minutes pretty well. We don't have a Tom Thibodeau situation in Indiana where the guys are playing 40 minutes a night routinely. So, you know, there are times guys are tired depending on the situation, but I don't think there's any real reason to kind of sit a guy out here or there. There's a more of a benefit to keep working, keep fine-tuning things, and continue to get better as you go towards the playoffs. One final thought, and it's always interesting what other people's perspective is on the Pacers, because we are so close to it. And that's why we talk about, you know, podcasts and around the NBA, and when somebody nationally writes an article about the Pacers, it's always interesting to get their take on it. But two things from coming out of Golden State that I kind of wanted to share and I thought was noteworthy. And one is, you know, Tim Bontemps, who writes for the Washington Post. I didn't get a chance really to talk to him last night, but he's kind of on the Warriors beat from a national perspective. And if you could go back and look at his tweets, and I've yet to see what he's written today or if he's talked about it on a podcast, but he was just not marveling, but just the tone of his tweets, I could tell he was a little bit mesmerized by the atmosphere in the locker room after the game, something that we see, you see even more than I do, because I'm not always in the locker room. I'm hosting the postgame show, but the songs that Victor was singing and the reaction from the players to Victor, and, you know, that was game 75, and that's a regular thing. But to this national writer that people, you know, people really respect his work, and I respect Tim's work as well, he was just struck by that. And I can tell that that's what's different about this team. That's what's maybe what's special about Victor as well, is just kind of the mood that he creates around a team after what was kind of a lackluster game to start a road trip. You know, he kind of had that mood. People who were not even a part of the team kind of felt it. And then the other thing was Steve Kerr before the game. So rare game 75 that you have not seen a team yet. So the Pacers had not played the Warriors, not just this season, but you have to go back to December of 2016. So it's crazy that it's been this long that the Pacers have actually played the Warriors. So someone asked Steve Kerr about the Pacers season so far. So let's take a listen to this quote. He says, "They've had a great year. We saw them last year a couple times. Last year, they didn't have a lot of life to them. Every year is different, so you can kind of see who's got it and who doesn't. Once you are a couple months into the season, every team kind of has a life force and energy and aura. This team, you can feel it. You watch them on TV and they've got juice. They play hard, get after you defensively. They have good chemistry. They are fun to watch." I mean, I know he's busy coaching a team, and when he's not coaching, he's probably watching Western Conference teams, but he took note, and I think what his observation could not be more accurate.
No, yeah, and that was he's one of the coaches, along with Popovich and a couple of others, that when you hear talk, you typically listen. And so I think just coming from him, those quotes were more powerful. And I think it's good to see a coach who is on the other side of the conference, who, of course, is dealing with a championship-contending team, that's able to look at the other conference, see a team that you know, maybe isn't a championship contender quite yet, but is hopefully building in that direction, and have you know, such accurate comments and be on top of things as much as he was. And I think it speaks a lot to both Steve Kerr and the Pacers, both of those comments that he made before the game yesterday. And a couple of comments I guess I wanted to throw back at your direction. I'm going to have these in reverse order of what I want you to speak about them. First of all, there was a picture that went a little bit viral of Lance Stephenson, and he was bringing on essentially a foiled over tub of something, and it turned a little bit viral into what exactly was what leftovers did it look like Lance was bringing on the plane. You got to the bottom of that, and we're going to hear from him in a minute, but also it was a couple of weeks ago you were talking about, hey, you know, the season has gone so much better than last year that we haven't had quite as many Dan Burkisms as we have in years past. And then right on cue, you guys got a nice little Dan Burkism last night.
We did. So which direction do you want me to go first? I guess I'll go with Dan first.
Why don't you start with the Dan Burke? Yeah, you start talk about the Dan Burke, and then we'll actually play the Lance Stephenson audio here in a second.
So it's a little selfish sometimes that when it's a Dan Burke night, which is every four games, you know, I'm okay if that's the game that the team gets off to a slow start, because he tends to give a better answer when things are not going well than when everything's peachy. So it was definitely a bad first half, not a good one to watch. People on Twitter were kind of like, what is going on, blah, 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 blah. So it was pretty easy to just kind of, all right, Dan's going to maybe be pretty good here. And he threw out the, I don't care about that analytics crap comment about shooting two-pointers and three-pointers. And it's actually, people loved it. It's the second or third time I've heard it from him. So, an old one's a good one. And in the elevator last night, at whatever time we got into the hotel in Sacramento, David Benner said, nice job with the halftime interview. He said, which part? You know, like, he thinks that everything he says is good. But, the analytics crap one. So I'm sure the Pacers analytics department got a good kick out of that. And I'm still working. I think that might have been enough to push it over the edge that I can put together the best of Dan Burke. I'm going to have to go into some of the practice interviews to get a few better one-liners. But I think I've got enough. And so hopefully the last week of the season we can air that on Fox Sports Indiana. And as for the Lance Stephenson, being around him and on plane flights, I guess I didn't really take it as being that big a deal when I saw him walk on the plane. But the Pacers social media crew with the team this week and sometimes travels. And so there was a photo of guys getting on the plane, and it just took off. It was one of these viral sensations where everyone wanted to know what Lance had in his aluminum tin. So I just, well, it's my job. I better just find out for everybody. And so he said he had his chef. Well, actually, I actually asked him, and I didn't ask him on camera, but I did have my recorder handy. So let's have a listen.
It was breakfast sandwiches.
That you picked up or somebody made for you?
My chef made it.
And you passing out to everybody?
Yeah. Everybody didn't want it. They had their own food, but some of them ate it.
But you like to get on the plane?
Yeah, I like to. I got a treat for everybody every time I get on the plane.
Since it was an early flight, it was breakfast. What's it normally?
Yeah.
It's always different.
It's normally like turkey wings or lasagna or something. Something is always something good.
So there you have it. Good to know Lance has a chef. A couple of other things. My guess was Hooters wings. I thought maybe he stopped, picked up some wings for lunch, and he was always used to be talking about Hooters. But he told me that after that interview, after I stopped recording, that he's nothing against Hooters, but he's tried to stay away from that. That he's more into the turkey wings, and he's worried about his figure right now, so he's trying to get a little bit older. So he would not be eating probably those kind of wings, but he did say that every flight he tries to get on and bring something for everyone else, which is, it's nice of him, but the plane does have good food as well. So, and I think TJ Leaf the rookies, they're responsible for bringing some things as well. So the guys have enough to pick from, but Lance looking out for his teammates. And just in general, I think your perspective, Pat, on Lance, he's the easiest person to talk about. He's always someone that has a story, and fans love him. But he has such an important role in this team because he's just unique. And you can't have all a team full of guys that, as Dan Burke actually had said, you can't have a team full of A students. And not to say, Lance is, a B student or a C student, but you get what he's saying. Like, you just got to have a mix, and you couldn't have a team full of Lances, but he kind of keeps it light. He keeps it fun. He keeps it interesting. At times, like last night in the second half, when he didn't get back on defense complaining at a call, he didn't. I don't think Nathan Millen was that happy with him, but he bounced back.
No.
And
no.
He kind of helps make this team complete.
Yeah, we talked a lot about last year and early into this year about how last year's team just had a lot of similar type of players. And I think this year is a much more well-rounded team just in terms of personalities. And I do think you need that one guy, when you play another team and you hear the fans say, oh, I can't stand X player. Maybe it's Joel Embiid with the Sixers, for example, or Tucker, wherever Tucker is, PJ Tucker, whomever that player is. You almost kind of need a guy like that, I think. And it's probably fairly safe to say that when other teams play the Pacers, that it's probably very often that it's Lance Stephenson that gets named in that context. But no, I think he gives this team an edge. I think he always keeps them, on their toes. Sometimes it's not always in a way that Nate McMillan wants or in a way that's productive. But I do think he brings something that nobody else has. And so I think that's important. And, you know, just kind of watching last night, it'll be interesting to watch him once you get to the playoffs, because his, while he has gotten better on the road, his home versus road numbers have been in pretty stark contrast. And he missed a couple of threes and a jump shot early last night, and I kind of started to think, oh man, here comes, you know, the Lance road struggles again. And I thought he did a really nice job as the game wore on, except for that sequence of not getting back on defense. But he got to the rim a couple of times. In that fourth quarter, he got to the rim, and that's where Lance is dangerous. He's got athleticism. He's got a quick first step. He's strong. Sometimes that power move is too strong and turns into a charge. But ultimately, he gets to the rim, and guys like that are extremely important when you're going through slumps, especially that can find their way, create their own way, get to the rim, and get easy shots. So, no, my first reaction to circle back and close the tinfoil thing, my first thought was, that's very nice, and I'm sure it's appreciated, but isn't there enough food on that plane? Because I've only been on it once, and it seemed like there was always enough food on the plane. But I think it's Lance being Lance, and maybe that old saying about how, you know, it's the thought that counts. You know, maybe that goes a long way with his teammates, and props to you for digging into that one and putting on your sleuthing detective hat.
Yeah, that was an easy one. And to be honest, you know, I did not know it was such a big deal. I was on JMV's show on Monday, and that was what he wanted to know, was what was in the tinfoil container. And then I got on Twitter, and I just saw how many people were mesmerized by it. And then even after the report last night, which was probably well after midnight Eastern time, people appreciated hearing that. So, you know, he was happy enough to share, and I guess I'll try to maybe keep that one going a little bit the next time he gets on the plane. If at Pacers is not right there, maybe I can help out a little bit as well. So, I do think that it is what makes kind of this team a little special and fun to be around. And at 82 games, 6 months, it's a long season, and it hasn't seemed long to me. And I know you haven't been traveling, but you know, you have a daily grind as well. And it is crazy. 75 games in right now, and the playoffs is right around the corner, but it's kind of flown by.
No, it certainly has. And as we get closer to the playoffs here, you're starting to see the playoff picture take shape. For example, 1-2 and 7-8 seem to be positions the Pacers won't land in. Not for sure, but especially with that win over the Warriors last night, the Pacers have tiebreak on 7-8. You know, they're not going to probably get to, they're definitely not getting to 1. They're not going to get to 2. So 3, 4, 5, or 6 is their likely landing spot, which means they're in all likelihood looking at 3 potential different opponents. Right now, if you go to the Basketball Reference playoff projections page, they are saying the most likely playoff opponent is the Cleveland Cavaliers. The next most likely would be Philadelphia. The third most likely would be Washington. So it seems like it's going to be one of those three teams. Right now, they're saying Cleveland is the most likely. So for our pick three, we're not going to necessarily pick three because the three have been chosen for us in that regard. But I wanted to look, and maybe this just isn't me analyzing one team and you analyzing one team and both analyzing the other one together. We can just kind of go back and forth on the positives and negatives on taking on each of these teams. We still have probably a few more games before the playoff picture really starts to look clearer and there becomes a definite answer, because Cleveland still could definitely catch Philadelphia. The Pacers could still finish in third. That's still very much a possibility. Indiana has tiebreak over those two teams. So a lot still up in the air. The Pacers have the most difficult schedule of that group. Let's start with Philadelphia, who the Pacers have the tiebreak on. The Pacers have faced 3 times. They've beaten twice. Indiana has, in fact, their last loss. The 76ers have won 7 games in a row since that Pacers win, and it's still the only time that they've lost in their home building in 2018. Your thoughts on if the playoff opponent were to be Philadelphia?
I say bring it on. It's crazy that the Pacers could be one of the stories of the NBA on Sunday. They clinch a playoff spot, and all anyone wanted to talk about, and I understand, like, Philadelphia's been at the bottom, and this is their first year to get into the playoffs since the process, but nobody even mentioned Monday that the Pacers got in the playoffs. It was the Pacers won, and that clinched a playoff spot for Philadelphia, and I think that will just continue. I mean, you have the Markelle Fultz situation. You have Joel Embiid. I mean, the Sixers are going to be the darlings of the Eastern Conference in this playoff first round, at least, and then I guess we'll just have to see what happens. And so I think that does fit to what's it's okay for the Pacers to be under the radar, to continue to act like they have something to prove. And the Philly fans are so confident, maybe borderline arrogant, but that's fine. I mean, they should be. They are They are having an outstanding season. Their defensive numbers are really good. You look at their offense, even just in terms of total points, since the Pacers held them to 98, they've gotten 118, 120, 108, 119, 118, 120, 123. Now they've played, Orlando, Memphis, Charlotte, Brooklyn, but they also just recently played Minnesota and Denver, teams that are fighting to get into the playoffs in the Western Conference, and they blew out both of those teams. So I guess most people around the NBA would say, oh, that's a Sixers win, but I'm looking at the box score right now, and it looked like the Sixers were pretty much at full strength when the Pacers played them in their building, and it was a 101-98 win for the Pacers. Bojan Bogdanovic was 1-for-11. Victor Oladipo was 4-for-21. Domas Sabonis sprained his ankle, and the Pacers still won. So I'm perfectly fine with that series. I'd love it to be 4-5 with Indiana with home court. But if not, I'd be okay with that as well. So if this is a pick three and I'm choosing, maybe that'll be my second choice of those three teams, but I'd be perfectly fine with a Pacers-Sixers series. What say you?
Yeah, I think that would be my first choice, but with all of the same, I think I'm mostly in agreement with everything you said. I just like the fact that if you're looking at those three teams, the Sixers would have the least amount of experience, clearly. And besides, Redick, there's not much playoff experience there. And so that would be that. I think if that were a 4-5 series, that would be a fascinating series, regardless of who has home floor. That seemed like it would be a series that would go very long. I could see it being a series where the Pacers could get one in Philadelphia. Philadelphia could, get one back here, and it could go the distance, kind of thing. A lot like maybe that Raptors series a couple of years ago, and maybe it's the team that gets home floor that has the advantage, but even if it did, it could go to seven games and be close in the final minutes like that Raptors series was. So I think, you watch in that Philadelphia game where Victor and Bojan really struggled and the Pacers win, I think that could give you some confidence if that is the matchup. But I also just think watching that game and watching the series against Philadelphia so far, it's been some of the more entertaining games the Pacers have played this year. So I think
that's your
Philadelphia
top choice.
That's my top choice, and I think it would be an entertaining series. And I don't mean it as a top choice because I think the Pacers would definitely win. I think all three of these teams would be really, really tough matchups, as they should be. We're in the playoffs. That's how things are supposed to be. They've got tons of talent, I guess, maybe as much as those other two teams, maybe even more. I just like the inexperience factor.
I guess my top choice would be Washington, and maybe it is just a, best chance of winning situation. Sure, I'm guessing if I had to pick of those three cities to spend 4 or 5 days, I'll take Washington, D.C. over Philadelphia and Cleveland. So maybe that just factors in just a little bit. But I'm also happy to share, too, that we are going to broadcast every game on Fox Sports Indiana that we are allowed to broadcast. So we'll be telling more details about this moving forward. But I think a Pacers-Wizards series, the only ones we would not be allowed to broadcast is if the game is on ABC. And so if the Pacers play the Cavs, probably at least one or two of those weekend games end up on ABC and we would have post-game show only coverage. But if it's the Wizards series, Sixers, I'm up in the air. If it's Pacers-Sixers at Philadelphia on that first weekend, do you think there's any chance that that's an ABC game?
Yeah, I don't know.
I tend to say no,
my gut
just
says,
because...
Yeah, my gut says no, but the story behind the Sixers is what's...
Right.
Tough to know.
Yeah, I would say no, and so I'd say we'd be pretty good spot. So there's some selfish reasons there. But back to the Warriors, or to the Wizards, I should say. Just their arena, it's not the same as, either Cleveland or Philadelphia. They just don't have that kind of buzz and home court advantage. And it just seems like, I think I might have even referenced this on either your podcast or another one, but the two losses the Pacers had to the Wizards are just almost throwouts. One game, no Darren Collison, no Victor Oladipo, and the other one, no Domas Sabonis and Miles Turner. So, two guys that are such key spots, similar spots, both being out. And the other game that, they were somewhat healthy, they won at Washington. So I'm all good with that. Victor will be fired up if he could play the series there close to home. That signed me up for that one. Pacers, Wizards. It's going to be tough. I don't know that Washington's going to get higher than 6. And so with that, I don't know if the Pacers can get to 3. I think there's a better chance of the Pacers passing Cleveland than Philadelphia just based on the schedule, because Philadelphia has a very easy schedule. That said, they're due for a letdown, aren't they? As you said, they haven't lost since the Pacers beat them, and they're getting so many pats on the back. I envision Philadelphia losing a game or two. You don't expect them to lose. From a Pacers perspective, though, the Clippers game, the Denver Nuggets game, teams trying to get in, and then if Golden State's closer to full health at home, and then at Toronto, depending on how the Raptors want to play, that's going to be tough. So if you just look at those four games, if you only win two of them, then you've got to have the Sixers lose a lot. So it's going to be tough to pass both those teams, but I'll prefer a Pacers-Wizards series.
And I think, I guess, the argument to why that would be the choice, as you said, is that would be the most likely scenario among the three where the Pacers have home court. So, yeah, I mean, I guess if you ask me, would you rather the Pacers be at home versus the Wizards or on the road versus Philly, I'll agree with you there. Cleveland, this is the interesting one. I meant to look this up before we did this, and I don't have the stat in front of me. You might remember it from last year because I know it was a discussion throughout the playoffs. LeBron hasn't lost a game in the first round of a series in like 4 years or something ridiculous like that. And there's, of course, the streak where he's been to the NBA Finals every year since 2010. So that, I guess, is getting both of our picks for last choice. Now, Cleveland, I think, and of those LeBron teams, this one probably feels the weakest of all of them. I don't know how much to take that into consideration because on one hand, like, they looked awful against Miami last night, and they've looked awful a lot, and they've looked bad since this trade a lot. So this trade that was supposed to fix everything hasn't really helped, and Kevin Love has, a head injury and all of that. So I'm still definitely picking them as my third, and I guess my gut is to trust the LeBron James team until they give you a reason not to trust him, at least as it relates to the Eastern Conference. But if the Pacers were to play the Cavs, I do think the scenario around it would feel different than last year or different than playing LeBron James teams in years past. Who knows how the outcome would go, but maybe it's just no significant star next to him like all those other years that they've had with Kyrie Irving being out.
I did just look it up. 21 consecutive wins in the first round for LeBron James, which is just, I mean, it's almost unfathomable. And yeah. I agree with you. But before last season, before the playoffs last season, I was actually pretty confident. You know, I tend to sometimes, I suppose, see the glass half full. But I thought that was a Cavs team that was faltering going into the playoffs. I mean, I remember their home announcing crew, watching them call a game against Atlanta who had basically rested all of their starters and the Cavs lost. And they said, this is flat out embarrassing. And they were trying to win. So to me, I was like, maybe they weren't trying to win. I mean, maybe there was some conspiracy that they wanted to play the Pacers. I don't know. But they were not playing well going into the playoffs. And, you know, the playoff Paul George, I mean, we know what he was capable of and we saw what he was able to do. I was confident going to that series, and the games were all close. So I would be confident in it being a series. I guess I just tend to say, no conspiracy theory here, but I'm not sure that LeBron James is someone who's going to be exiting in a first round in the NBA playoffs. I think the run comes to an end in the Eastern Conference this season. I don't expect them to be the representative in the finals. I totally would think of Toronto to be that team, and I could see Boston getting back healthy and being able to beat the Cavs as well, and I think the Pacers could beat them. I mean, it just depends on situations and scenarios, but I don't want to play them in the first round. I'd rather just try somebody else, and I want to have every game on Fox Sports Indiana as well. Why not?
No, I hear you there. That would certainly be good, I think, for you, me a little bit, everybody involved, so hopefully that's the case. We've got a few minutes here. You're in Sacramento. Let's talk about the rest of this road trip. Three games to go. The easier two games seem to be 1 and 2 since the Warriors injury scenario. You and I were talking a couple of weeks ago, and I think we both kind of agreed that 46 and 36 would be a really good finishing record for the Pacers to get to, and it was going to take some work. They're going to have to win some tough games to get there. You're looking at it now. You're 44 and 31. If you got there, I'm still, I don't know about you, I'm still happy with 46 and 36 if that's where they end up, but it's starting to look like 47, 48 is a more realistic and obtainable goal.
I think so. You know, you can't predict how a team's going to be in terms of health and mindset, and with that in mind, the Toronto game really stands out to me as a very curious situation because they're going to get to the point where they really don't have anything to play for. The only thing you could even say by this point next week maybe could be that They would be playing for a better record than Golden State should the two meet in the finals and home court advantage. So I don't think they're going to be wholesale resting a bunch. I think a game here, a game there, they're going to rest some people. And their bench is so good. I mean, even last night, I did not catch, obviously, all of their game, but I saw that they rested Lowry and DeRozan the entire fourth quarter, and they still came from behind to beat, was it the Nuggets?
Was it the Nuggets?
I mean, that maybe the Nuggets or the Timberwolves. I think it was a team that, I'll check it real quick, that was trying to get into the playoffs. Yeah, Toronto beat Denver 114-100. So, they're phenomenal. Yeah. I think that they're the favorite in the Eastern Conference. But that said, you don't know how that's going to be. So I thought 46 wins when we had that conversation could get you a 4-5 spot. But given how well Cleveland was playing and how well Philadelphia is playing, I still think you're going to be 4-5 if you get to 46 or 7 because I don't really trust Washington. But you don't have the tiebreaker with them. So, but I think I set my sights on 48. That'd be phenomenal. But 46 would be just fine. And this road trip coming up should be interesting. Sacramento, you'd like to think is a win, but you can't get off to a bad start. The Pacers have done that before here. That was the site of the classic Dan Burke fan jam halftime interview where and really one of the biggest
and they won that
they did win that game, but it was one of the biggest comebacks I think in franchise history. I'll go back and dig that up prior to the pregame show tomorrow. But he said, I don't know if we're playing like our whatever we're playing like we're in.
We think it's fan jam or something. Yeah.
But then, the Clippers in Denver. The best thing about this road trip, though, is since the first week of March and a little over 3-4 weeks, the Pacers have at least had a game every other day. And Friday just stands out to me on the schedule as a great day because the Pacers will try to take care of business against Sacramento, fly to Los Angeles, and just have a complete off day for everybody. No practice, nothing, and be in Los Angeles, and then have that extra day to practice and then get ready for an afternoon game, which I enjoy Sunday afternoon games. It'll be tough on the crew because the game will tip off at, I believe, 12:30 Pacific time. So our producers, directors, graphics crew, Max Linewan, Ken Softman, Jamie Burns, Marika Bajos, they will all head to the arena at about, 6 o'clock in the morning on Sunday, and we'll have our meeting about 10:45. So I'm guessing eggs in the media room at Staples Center. But that'll be a fascinating game because the Clippers are still trying to get in, and so are the Denver Nuggets. And I'm also looking forward to having a Final Four Saturday and Championship Monday with no games. So this was a week that I was really looking forward to when the schedule came out. I didn't know, though, if it'd be a week where you would be thinking about the playoffs or maybe considering it your final regular season or Pacers vacation, and it's been much more than that. So it should be a fun week, really.
No, I think well stated. So Thursday, that game against Sacramento, assuming you are watching or listening here in Eastern time zone, 10 o'clock is the tip, but Jeremiah on Fox Sports Indiana, 9:30, and on the Kroger pregame show on radio at 9:30 as well. Sunday, as you alluded to, 3:30 out in L.A., so a 3 o'clock tip. Those are the local times here in Indianapolis. The Pacers then close out their road trip in Denver. Just two home games left, Golden State on Thursday, April 5, and then Charlotte on Tuesday, April the 10th. That's Fan Appreciation Night. If you've never been to one of those, highly recommend. All right, Jeremiah Johnson, you are out in Sacramento. Any final thoughts from you?
Nope, I just, I'm ready for it to be, when we get back home, Pat, can you talk to some of the weathermen and women in Indianapolis? I'm ready for it to be nice. I want March weather. I want to feel like playoffs. And so we'll be back next Wednesday, and that game against the Warriors should be a lot of fun. I think at least a couple of their stars should at least be on the court for that game. So I'm looking forward to that, looking forward to being back home. But as I look outside my hotel room in Sacramento and I see sun and I went and had breakfast without a coat on, let's get back to having that back home.
Yeah, I agree. It's been a little warmer, but we've been cloudy and kind of spitting and like it's London all over.
Don't bring that up.
Hopefully that'll change upon your arrival. He's Jeremiah Johnson out in Sacramento and Indianapolis. I'm Pat Boylan. Thanks for listening to us this week on the Sideline Guys podcast.